Sorry, a large patch of nettle on the farm, which we make into nettle tea, which is a wonderful fertiliser. As you have heard from Peter, we have retired and planted a paddock where there is a natural spring and wetland plants are regenerating. In the words of KiwiRail's ecologist Jeremy Garrett-Walker, in one area we found a small growth of watercress and several Eleocharis acuta. Eleocharis acuta is commonly known as sharp spike sedge. Given that the NPSFM requires that there be no further loss of inland wetlands, and Te Mana o Te Wai prescribes that the Wai should be allowed to function in its own right, then protecting the hauora of the Wai itself must take priority surely. This statement also surely applies to the stream length that is proposed to be culverted, the stream where there is life. We know it is home to eels.
When was that photo taken?
And the one with the eel?
Yeah.
September last year, just before Christmas.
Thank you.
And in following that through in relation to our property, there must surely be ecological considerations around the extent to which the natural flood basin's makeup has particular attributes because of the regular flooding, naturally occurring sedimentation of nutrients to the soils, for instance. The rushes up the side of the basin distinctly delineate the tide line of the highest flooding. Because the water pools, when the level recedes, rush seeds are left behind. You have heard from Peter. You have heard from Peter the regularity of flooding in the basin. There are permanent drop-down flooding signs at each end on Tenaya Road because of the regularity. As Peter has said, this natural flood basin protects areas upstream and downstream of the Mungoni. We cannot see the detention ponds proposed being able to cope. The settler's hut on section 1478, which is not on our land but is on the footprint of the hub, site 16 of the archaeological report, belonged to settler John MacDonald and may have value. It has not been identified in the report. I have brought the notes I made when going through the notice of requirement documentation on the website, which refer to particular documents, paragraphs and page numbers to which I have made notes in red ink. More information about the reliance on artificial distinctions between site options and weightings made within the MCA process is provided there. And I have that on USB, which I can provide to Kath so it can be distributed. I don't want to bore everyone by going through them report by report and paragraph by paragraph in this forum, so we'll provide them for you to peruse later. One of many examples is in the assessment of environmental effects, which says, the closest residential zoned sites to the freight hub are located on Maple Street, Railway Road, Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road, Stony Creek Road and on Nathan's Place. Other sites in Bunnythorpe are zoned industrial, local business or recreational. This statement overlooks all the houses on Cleveley Line, Sangsters Road, Pars Road and Tutaki Road, housing equally close and in some cases closer to the hub, and in doing so greatly underrepresented the effects on properties in the eyes of the assessors. Information about the road, future roading options within the notice of requirement is extremely limited when this is a major consideration for the people of Bunnythorpe, who have been opposing the Bunnythorpe end of the Rural Freight Ring Road and the Fielding to Palmerston North connection to it ever since it was first proposed back in 2010. It first started in 2007 with the proposal of options for improved connection of Fielding to Palmerston North. It then morphed into a Rural Freight Ring Road and Fielding to Palmerston North connection, after a joint transport study was commissioned by the two territorial authorities in 2010. It has now morphed into the PNITI, which KiwiRail have said is not available publicly. That's rubbish. At a public meeting in Bunnythorpe, which was requested by Palmerston North City Council to inform residents of the impending 10-year plan submission process, back in May if I recall rightly, a visual presentation was made by NZTA representative Ross Hyanson about the PNITI. He then supplied the full document for circulation. The NZTA board have approved it. The Palmerston North City Council 10-year plan allows and discusses investment into it, and both projects in fact looked lined up to be delivered in tandem. That the effects on the community of the KiwiRail freight hub will be detrimental is just half of the picture. When giving evidence, Mr. Skelton pointed out that the logging trucks would be using the northern access to the freight hub. This is in Bunnythorpe. Mr. Skelton also said in his evidence that with the closure of Roberts Line rail crossing, traffic would divert to Stony Creek Road. This is another large amount of commuter traffic being purposely diverted through Bunnythorpe, particularly when a lot of that traffic currently utilises the length of Roberts Line, right through to Newbury Line, thereby missing the Bunnythorpe village. This, on top of the rail hub and state highways, is just outrageous. These KiwiRail assessments should not have been made in isolation from the PNITI proposal. We believe it was the fact that Bunnythorpe had slipped through the cracks for years in terms of being formally referred to as a village. Bunnythorpe was just a point on a map with no population attached, which probably stemmed from being split between different councils when original statistical boundaries were formed. This allowed the 2010 Joint Transport Study writers to propose that state highways go through our village. The fact that they have called them bypasses of Bunnythorpe ever since, when as you can see by Stats New Zealand settlement boundary map, it goes through our village, gives credibility to our thinking. All roading plans since, including the PNITI, have been based on the 2010 JTS. The delineation of a settlement by Stats New Zealand is by historical maps and by housing density. If we didn't have the housing density, the settlement boundary would have been smaller. The review of statistical boundaries undertaken by Stats New Zealand in 2018 has rectified this, and official population stats are now available. It is said in the assessment of environmental effects, the area occupied by the freight hub does not currently contain any specific community and leisure facilities. However, the opportunity to provide walking and cycling connections is shown in the landscape plan. The northern area, in particular Tenaya Road and Cleveley Line, is a very popular area for walkers and cyclists, and many from all over Bunnythorpe use this area for their exercise and leisure. Some pushing children and buggies, others walking their dogs, and many groups of cyclists regularly use this corridor. This is because they are beautiful, quiet country lanes, full of domestic and wild animals. While walking this area, it is common to see pūkeko, kingfisher, ducks, rabbits, hares, hawks, horses and farm animals. Springtime is wonderful to see the little offspring of the various creatures. When you have this in your backyard, there's no need for a leisure facility, but this will all be lost to our residents. Also in this assessment, it says, the Glaxo factory was located between Campbell Road, Dutton Street and Ashurst Road. It was subsequently used as a manufacturing plant for its BMX bikes and is currently zoned industrial. This sentence gives the impression that the Glaxo building is not still there. It is, and could be affected by construction not only of the freight hub, but the huge road infrastructure that is proposed. This is another reason that the two projects need to be assessed for their combined effects on residents of Bunnythorpe. And in our opinion, the effects will be so great as to be unable to be mitigated and therefore must change. The loss of amenity and losing our immediate environment is huge. Not only do I consistently walk the Tenaya Road, Cleveley Line roads to keep active the hip replacement I received last year, but because of the But because of the environment we have encouraged, we regularly have tui, bellbird, grey warbler and fantail in our backyard. And the visiting black-fronted dotterel to the farm where pukeko and ducks are prevalent. As keen bushwalkers, Peter and I have never been closer to New Zealand bird life than we are at home. Our outlook from the office in our house is to the paddock that we planted. We often get a group of cheeky pukeko wandering our lawn for food, and on one occasion recently we looked out our dining room window to see a hawk standing on the lawn not 3 metres away. Not only will the land and house we will be left with be heavily impacted by the construction and operation of the freight hub, particularly in terms of noise, vibration, dust and traffic, we also lose our lifestyle and income. We are outdoors people. To have our windows treated is a fine gesture, but to walk out the door to the type and level of noise this hub will create will be excruciating when our current environment is so peaceful. We have spent years tuning our operation to meet the environmental and sustainability needs of the land, as well as our own health, well-being and self-reliance goals. To have this land not only taken from us, but bowled for a concrete jungle that still in our mind cannot be substantiated as an appropriate site for this type of project is inconceivable.
Thank you, Dale. I'll just see if there are any questions.
Kia ora koutou. Thank you all for coming along and presenting your submissions to us today. We understand how difficult this must be for you and empathise with the unimaginable difficulty of you must be going through given the uncertainty and the adverse effects that the Freight Hub proposal is throwing up for you and your family. So I empathise with you. I just have a couple of questions of clarification for you. I was wondering, first of all, what proportion, how many acres of your land is being proposed to be taken?
60.
And you'll be left with?
About 5 that you can't build on because it's flat, it floods. We've got a house on the hill and we've got 5 either side of the Mangoni stream that. And no water either. We've got 2 lovely water bores on the farm, but both of them are under the rail hub, so a small farm with no water is pretty crap.
I see. So that second house that you pointed out for us.
That's a rental house, yeah.
Okay.
He's been there all of his life. He's been there 3 generations, so it's his house basically.
Okay.
My dad bought the farm many years ago, and I come with the family, and they've never left. His great-grandmother, his grandparents built the house.
Oh, really?
So he's never been anywhere else either.
But that forms part of the 5 acres that you'd be left with?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that. Just turning to photo 7, where you've got that fantastic image there of the stream in the Hinaki. Got a few eels in it. Are those long fins?
They're the bog standard common one.
Oh, they're the short fin, are they?
Yeah.
Well, they're quite big though.
Yeah. Well, having said that, that come from bloke next door. I don't know if he's an expert either, but he seems to know more about eels than I. That's what Tom said. He thought it was just the bog standard.
I see. So do the local iwi come and
all of them alive.
They do.
The Kōwhiro have always been there, always. And when the drains used to get cleaned out by the old catchment board and Horizons used to before they lost interest in it, I'd give some of the lads in fielding in the past a heads up, and they'd come out with a whole team of kids. The kids have done the muddy job. They stood on the banks, but yes, there was. Yeah,
Kapo.
Always getting cress and eels out the water courses.
Okay. So it's a recognised mahi a kaiō, food gathering site.
Yeah, it's always just been part of part of generational life. The Ngāti Kaupapa have always been there.
And is this stream always flowing, or is it intermittent?
Yeah, it's the water that always keeps it moving is an overflow from a bore in the old Gallifield Plaxo factory.
So there is always
fresh water going through it.
So it's always wet?
Always wet. Always running. Always clear.
Great, thank you. Those were all the questions from me. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. I do have one question, and it's around the location of the settler's hut. The archaeological expert for Kiwi Rail seemed to have quite a lot of trouble identifying where it is, so I was wondering if you could explain to us exactly where that hut is located.
So where Richardson's line currently meets Railway Road, back towards Bunnythorpe, one section back, there's buildings on that section, and one of those buildings you can see is the hut, the settler's hut.
You bear with me, I'm just looking on Google Earth.
On Railway Road, yeah.
So is that on the west side of Railway Road, just north of Richardson's line?
Yes.
Yes,
just south of Richardson. Oh, no, north of Richardson's line. No, you're right. Well, yes.
Yeah, so just to the north of where there's that private level crossing going out to the Tutaki site.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we have the legal submissions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Morgan, just before you start, sorry, could I just say one more thing about how difficult this has been? We've had this difficulty since 2007 because we've always had the roading over our heads. So for 14 years, we've always been in this situation. It's just been exacerbated recently. I just wanted to get that across. It's been a long road. Thank you, Morgan.
Thank you very much.
So this submission is made on behalf of Peter Gore and Dale O'Reilly, who you've already heard from. The purpose of this submission is to address what in my submission is a central legal issue, namely the insufficiency of KiwiRail's assessment of effects and inappropriate deferral of proper effects assessment to the outline plan stage. For completeness, I record, firstly, the limited focus of these submissions should not be taken in any way to indicate a narrowing of the breadth of matters raised in Peter and Dale's written submission. And secondly, the reason conditions are not being addressed is that Peter and Dale are opposed outright to the requirement and do not wish to participate in refining the details for a project they believe should not proceed. Turning then to effects assessment. As you know, KiwiRail is leaving a considerable amount of detail to be developed at later stages of the project, to be incorporated in detailed design and addressed as part of the submission of an outline plan, assuming the requirement is confirmed. This two-stage approach is openly acknowledged in KiwiRail's legal submissions and evidence. In my submission, KiwiRail has taken the approach too far, with the result that it has failed to provide you with the information you need to undertake an effects assessment. Effects assessment is the focal point of Section 171. Counsel for KiwiRail rightly identify that in Sustainable Matata against Bay of Plenty Regional Council, the Environment Court said that many cases are prepared on the basis that final design is not known and the designation process recognises the need for flexibility. However, the price for this flexibility cannot be the lack of information to inform a proper effects assessment. In Sustainable Matata, the court went on to say, in recent years, there has been a tendency of consultants to park significant issues, utilising the devices of management plans and generalised conditions to address effects. The court has repeatedly noted its concern that it must, in terms of both designations and resource consents, be able to understand both